The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But now, new ESRI research has crunched the numbers and points to free GP care being a potential reality by 2026. Is that feasible? Is there capacity? And what part could pharmacies play in giving a dig out to GPs? Well, to talk about all of this, we're joined by the chairperson of the GP subcommittee of the Irish Medical Organisation, Dennis McCauley, and ex-officio president of the Irish Pharmacy Union, vice president of the International Pharmacists Federation, Dara Connolly. Good morning and welcome to you both. Dennis, this business of free GP care for all by 2026, if we've got the money, the ESRI suggests that it is a possibility. What do you think?
Well, actually, Pat, I'm not sure if it actually does do that. I think in their commentary, Dr. Connolly actually voiced his concern as to whether there is actually enough GPs to service the demand. I think that Dr. Connolly, she accepts that the workload is increasing because we're getting older, and she queries whether there is indeed the actual capacity if we add in the extra work associated with pre-GP care. I think just to remind the listeners what's actually being proposed this year, there seems to be there isn't really a plan to rule out free GP care. There seems to be an ad hoc decision this year to introduce up to 500,000 new GP cards. And our statement and the ERSI agrees is that there isn't the infrastructure, nor is there the GP capacity to actually do this. What will this mean? It'll mean waiting lists. It'll mean young GPs who are trying to ask to stay in Ireland will say this is like the UK. It's going to be an absolute nightmare. And the older GPs like myself are going to say this is just too much work. There's 60 people to see. I can only see 40. Who will What will I do? So I think the ERSI have crunched the numbers, but they do put the very strong caveat that they have figures that I don't agree with. They're saying that the workload is only going to be increased by 12%. I disagree. I think it's going to be much more. But even at that low 12%, they question whether there is going to be a paradox in that sláinte care, which the politicians are always talk about timely care, which is free at the point of access. It may all be free, but you won't be able to see a GP.
Now, everyone used to tout the NHS as the example that we should aspire to, but everything I read, both in Northern Ireland and on the island of Britain, seems to suggest that you might have to wait 3 weeks to see a GP.
Indeed, I live on the border. In Northern Ireland, there is still not seeing face-to-face consultations since after COVID. And in Belfast, there's the beginning of a private GP service. People are turning to actually pay for their GP. The situation in the UK is a salutary lesson. I think no matter what system you're thinking of bringing in, if you don't have the capacity, you're just going to wreck it.
Yeah.
And Pat, I still will maintain that. I'm wondering why we need to actually change it. I think the present system we have is excellent. You have private and public patients are treated exactly the same. There is no significant waiting list at the present minute. I think the flu epidemic has shown that we don't have much reserve. So I think that no matter what system you actually bring in, you have to actually plan for it. The Minister for Health recently apologised on air, saying that the reconfiguration of Limerick didn't go well, and that he has delayed the Navan rollout because there wasn't the capacity and the infrastructure there present. I would argue that argument completely and utterly reflects the argument that we're making now for free GP care. There isn't the infrastructure or the capacity for this at the present minute.
So, you know, the same number of people, probably with the exception of the triple-demic we're in at the moment, but typically every year the same number of people get sick. So what you're suggesting is that with free GP care, the pattern of attending GPs would change, that people would go more often, because if we have the capacity at the moment, you know, making it free, if nothing else changed, wouldn't change the capacity issue. But if you're suggesting that people go to their GP much more often when it's free, that either suggests an unfulfilled need at the moment on the part of those patients, or that people kind of abuse the system because it's free.
Well, no, I think I wouldn't call it abuse. I think if you remove the financial barrier to a service, they will use it more. And I think there's an argument, oh, it's because they can't pay that they will go. It's the barrier to the care, the financial barrier that's stopping them going. No, I think it's just people will go. If you look at middle class children under six, a lot of them attend much more frequently because it's free. If you look at now, it's just a fact. It is not a judgment. I wouldn't call it abuse. It's just what will happen. If you look at in my own figures, the vast majority of the people who will be getting the doctor visit cards would be that population between 16 and 44. If you look at the differential visiting rates for that grouping, there's a factor of nearly 4 to 5 that people will come more often, and I think that has to be recognised. We're not criticising that, but I think the worry would be that we had a Minister for Health coming on and apologising for the reconfiguration, and they said, we got it wrong, we are sorry. I'm just trying to alert people that we don't want another Minister for Health coming on in 3 or 4 years to say, oh, you know, remember the system that used to work, it now doesn't work, we actually got it wrong. Because you can't roll back, you can't say, Dennis, sorry, you can't have your card now.
Dennis, what about the idea of having a gatekeeping charge? In other words, you pay something. In France, it's under €8 you pay, and there's an annual ceiling on it, and similar systems exist in other countries where, you know, you have to pay something to go to the GP, although it won't be €50 or €60, it could be a tenner, say, and that means that you won't go unnecessarily because it will cost you a tenner.
Well, you see, that's after the horse has sort of bolted. I think what you looked at, if you look in the UK, what happened was that they tampered with the GP service so much that it became completely overwhelmed. Then a retrospective thing, the first thing they did was they actually vilified the GPs to say they were lazy and they weren't working hard enough. And now the Conservative government is considering putting in a user charge. My argument is that at the present system, the people who are poor and are sick get their GP care free. So why are you tinkering with that?
No, what I'm suggesting is that, you know, the 18 to 49-year-old who might, instead of going once a year, might go 5 times a year because it's free, if you tell that 18 to 49-year-old, listen, every time you go to the GP, it's going to cost you a tenner, that's, if you like, the gatekeeping charge, they might think twice.
I think you have to look at it from the policy. You're actually putting in a barrier because you want to change the actual system. My actual view would be that only change the system when you have the capacity to actually do it. And I think that the ESRI talked about two free visits. Rather than give somebody a doctor visit card, why not give them two free GP visits per year? My argument would be that just change, rather than give everybody the equivalent of 100, €120 a year, why not use that money to allow the people who are just on the borderline to have a medical card? I would much prefer the system that isn't that you go on an age-related basis. I would much prefer a system where the people at the boundaries who are actually finding it difficult to pay for their GP and do other things, that we allow them to see their actual GP for free. If you swamp a system, it's the sick and the poor who get forgotten about. And this is why it is. Pat, if you look at the Dáil at the present minute, they all talk about sláinte care. It's very like Brexit, isn't it? Oh, listen, don't worry. You don't have to listen to the experts. It'll be fine. Experts don't really understand. We have the ERSI, we have GPs, we have the Irish Medical Organisation, we have the Irish College saying, this is a system that you should not change. Because if you change it, you're at risk of actually ruining it completely. And I worry that waiting lists and an inability to see your GP, and that it will be less and less face-to-face. Yeah. It'll be more and more phone, and that actually worries me greatly.
Dennis, the cynics among our listeners will say this is all about preserving private income in practices, that if everyone gets a free GP card, that there will be no private income for doctors, even though the ESRI were contemplating, I heard Dr. Sheila Connolly this morning talking about this, contemplating the continuation of private practice, but it would effectively vanish. And therefore, doctors would be completely at the mercy of whatever capitation fee that the government of the day decided to pay.
I can guarantee that your listeners that isn't the case. I think that When you talk about rural general practice, which I'm in, the vast majority of my income comes from the GMS. I don't depend on private income really for my to actually survive. I'm looking at the system, and the system is that the Sláintiúil Care says that regardless of what system you have, timely care is important, and tinkering with this is going to do the opposite. And I just wish there was more political debate about this. It's almost like a zombie. Sláintiúil Care is good. Sláintiúil Care is good. It is only good if it's planned. And the awful thing about it is we don't know. The ESRI have sort of said over 4 years, we've had no indication from the government when the rollout of the system will actually be. It's almost like a sugar rush. It's coming up to an election. Let's give 500,000 free GP cards to the population. Now, I would like to break that image that it's a good thing. I'd like to actually say the more GP people that get free GP care too quickly, the system, you will have great difficulty getting to see your GP.
Yeah. Now, listening to that, Dara Connolly, ex officio president of the Irish Pharmacy Union, vice president of the International Pharmacists Federation. Dara, you believe that pharmacists could give GPs a bit of a dig out and free up capacity. How so?
Yeah, good morning, Pat. Hi, Dennis. Nice to talk to you again. Yeah, I listened with real interest and intent there to what Dennis was saying about his practice as a GP in Donegal and how that relates to my practice as a pharmacist in Dungarvan. I'd agree with everything that Dennis says about his interpretation. For me as a pharmacist looking at the policy proposal from the ESRI, and I think that's all we should think of it as at the minute, as a policy proposal. Where I'm a little bit taken aback by what Dennis had to say, though, is he says that this is a system we should not change. I think the only way that we can make the system better is by looking at it, seeing where the capacity is, and actually listening to patients, people out there, whether they're in Donegal or in Dungarvan, and listen to them and say, well, what is it that we can make your healthcare journey, your healthcare experience better? So to give you a really good example of, there are 1.2 million people out there, or doses of COVID vaccines that people got in community pharmacies. So we helped save lives by accelerating the rollout of the COVID vaccine in Ireland. So it's not that we're saying that this is a policy thing we should look at in the future, that pharmacists can do more. When pharmacists have been called upon in healthcare emergencies to do more, sure, we've done it, and it's been really successful.
But these are emergencies, so, and I've had the flu vaccine in a pharmacy, I've had the COVID vaccine in a pharmacy, and so on. But in more day-to-day, general, ongoing patient care, how can the pharmacists be more involved to take the load off the GP?
What we do in any of these systems is we look at what is international best practice. And we're not alone in the Republic of Ireland of having capacity squeezes at general practice and an accident and emergency. So there's data that comes from the Royal Society of General Practice in the UK that shows that 1 in 12 hospital emergency visits could have been dealt with in a community pharmacy, and 1 in 7 GP visits could have been dealt with appropriately and safely in a pharmacy.
What sort of things?
So if I was to say to you that if you have somebody who has vaginal thrush or urticaria, seasonal rhinitis, minor sprains and injuries, this is that people come to pharmacies for help for in Ireland already. If we could make that accessible to everybody through a publicly funded system, we can do for everybody what we are already doing for private patients, to free up the capacity to unleash Dennis and the GPs in Ireland to be able to do more for patients at the appropriate level of care. Dennis quite rightly...
But are you suggesting that you do... You talked about vaginal urticaria, whatever it is. I'm not familiar with the condition, obviously, but that you'd do physical examinations of patients in pharmacies?
No, no.
So then how would you know you're getting it right?
I would guarantee you that there are lots of ways of finding out if somebody has got vaginal thrush or urticaria without doing a total physical examination. It's not needed, and the appropriate care can be given in the pharmacy. But the first thing that you learn as a healthcare professional is to treat somebody at your level of expertise, and where you cannot help them anymore at your level of expertise, you refer them up the line. And that's why a hospital emergency exists, because those people cannot be taken care of by a GP. Or that's why we in the pharmacy, if we can't help somebody at the level of care that they need, we refer them to the GP. What we're looking at is creating the capacity and the access in a system where there is a lack of capacity and
okay.
there is a lack of access.
So you're saying 1 in 7 of current GP appointments could be diverted to pharmacies, and they would be appropriately treated there, or if necessary, referred up the line. Dennis McCauley, what do you think of that?
I Darren and I will probably, he's agreeing with me so far, but I think we'll probably diverge slightly. I think the National Institute for Health in the UK looked at this, and they published a very big review of it last year. And I think if we have a capacity issue, the safest and the best way to do that is to have more GPs. I think that there was a minor illness study performed by in Ireland with the pharmacists, and they found that the introduction of a minor illness protocol didn't really affect the amount of work that the GP had to do. I do think that to get the best quality and the safest method is to sort of say, what do we need? I think there is a flawed policy when we discuss this with the HSE as well, that there is a feeling that if you increase support staff in general practice, whether it be nurse, whether it be access to a pharmacist, that is in some way will decrease the need for acute consultations. And the research would actually say the opposite, that it doesn't really help. So I think that irrespective of whether these systems are actually there, I think the workload in general practice remains the same. And I think for safe quality care, the National Institute for Health recommended the best and safest way is just to have more GPs.
Okay, well, look, we'll leave that discussion between pharmacies and GPs for another day. But one final point, Dennis, about the number of GPs. If we could hang on to more of our doctors for a couple of years, that would alleviate the crisis on an ongoing basis, because every year you've got a new horde of graduates emerging. And I was thinking a very simple way to do that would be that you don't get your final certification until you've done a couple of years in real world practice before you could head off to Dubai or South Africa or Australia or New Zealand or Canada or wherever you want to go. Just delay final certification, which would keep graduates here for a couple of years, and that would really sort out the problem.
It sounds good, as somebody once said to me, logical but incorrect. I think that the GPs, when they're doing their GP training, actually do that. They work in the hospitals as they do to get their training. They then work 2 years in general practice anyway. And I think as a union representative, I think I would say they have fulfilled that aspect that you're talking about. I think the important thing is to sort of say, listen, the service, when there was a financial crisis in general practice, very, very briefly, that was resolved recently. And I had a view and a vision that we are now going to be able to talk to young GPs and get them to stay, to female GPs to become partners, part-time partners, to work well. And it was looking really well. I think that if there wasn't this politically generated health crisis coming, I think we could sort general practice out. But unfortunately, they keep tinkering, and that tinkering, I think, is going to have severe results.
All right. Dennis, thank you very much for joining us. Dennis McCauley, chairperson of the GP subcommittee of the IMO. And before that, Dara Connolly, ex officio president of the Irish Pharmacy Union and vice president of the International Pharmacists Federation.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.